Ready to go? Because he wants to gavel down.
Okay.
We're all ready to go.
So I wash my hands all the time.
Okay, it's past the appointed hour. I'll call to order the House Committee on Healthcare for Wednesday, February 16th, 2011. We're going to change the order of business just a bit for the introduction of some committee bills that normally would be at the end and move up the front. Other than that, we'll take the agenda as it's printed. And do I have someone who'd like to make a motion?
Mr. Chair?
Oh, I'm sorry.
You got it. Go.
Open a work session.
Mr. Chair, I move the following LCs be introduced as committee bills. LC 3432, dated 2-10-11. LC 3428, dated 1-24-11. LC 3706, dated 2-9-11. And LC 3231, dated 2-9-11.
Thank you. Vice Co-Chair Kennemer moves that the following LCs be introduced as committee bills: LC 3432, dated 2-10-11; LC 3428, dated 1-24-11; LC 3706, dated 2-9-11; and LC 3231, dated 2-9-11. Is there any discussion on these, which you probably haven't even seen? So we're only just introducing them in the process. Are there any objections? Okay. If not, then the measures are introduced as committee bills, and you'll all see them in due time. Close the work session on introduction of committee bills, and we'll move into our agenda. First up today, we'll open a public hearing on House Bill 2394. And my esteemed assistant here will tell us exactly what we need to know.
Okay, Mr. Co-Chair, members of the committee, House Bill 2394 allows health professional regulatory boards to which monies in fund or an account are continuously appropriated to spend without limitation specified percentage of monies in the fund or account for expenses relating to conducting contested case proceedings. Mr. Co-Chair, members of the committee, you may recall that the governor's office and Representative Hoyle put together a work group. They did some work. They identified some topics. This was one of the topics and one of the recommendations. I believe, and I apologize, I didn't put their preliminary plan on the internet, but I will as post-meeting material, and you'll have a chance to get some additional background on it, but we do have some folks here today to speak to the bill.
Okay. I have to admit, I get really nervous whenever I see the word spend without limitation in the same sentence. But understanding what this basically is
your
about.
Your wife have that working?
Any number of connotations with that,
be used
that
to
string of words is a problem. Okay, I understand we have Patrick Bratz testified. I think you can both come up together. And Martin Pitioni. If you'd please state your name and identification for the record before you begin.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Co-Chair Thompson, Co-Chair Greenlick, and members of the committee, my name is Patrick Bratz, and I'm the Executive Director of the Oregon Board of Dentistry. I'm here today to speak on 2394. As your committee clerk or committee administrator mentioned, that there was a work group put together in last year that involved the governor's office and Representative Hoyle, and one of the things that it looked at is where could there be some efficiencies or effectiveness among the boards and various commissions, especially health regulatory boards. Where could we find some things that were working well? Where could we find some things that we could make improvements? I happen to chair one of the subcommittees which dealt with issues regarding the Department of Justice, and as you are well aware, we do a lot of work with the Department of Justice. The Assistant Attorney Generals are our legal counsels and support us in our regulatory aspects. One of the proposals that came up was the fact that a number of boards, there's no way in a prior to a biennium for us to know how many disciplinary matters we're going to take, how many possible matters may go to a contested case hearing, which in many cases costs thousands and thousands of dollars. And so it's a very serious issue, especially for some of the smaller boards who have very small budgets. If all of a sudden they would get a contested case hearing, which could last 3, 4, 5 days, this could be $10,000, $20,000, $30,000, $40,000. They would not have this kind of appropriation. In some cases, they go to the e-board then to get the kind of funding they need. In some cases, they may not have that funding available. And so it may end up being a deterrent to not go to that hearing, and yet the public needs to be protected. And so from those recommendations, this is one of the recommendations that would take and set aside a certain percentage of money from biennium to biennium that would be specifically used for assistant attorney generals in contested case hearings, thus not having to always go to this e-board process, and in some cases for some boards it would allow them to have this money available. I understand also your concern about the word limitation and spending in the same sentence, so I understand what you're with. Martin Petone is here, who's one of the members, one of my colleagues, and he has some specific testimony. I think he'll give you a better idea based on his board and his experience of why we're looking for this. And I'm not even positive if this is the right language, but it was an idea to come forward and get it into some kind of language.
Okay.
So, thank you.
We'll go ahead and let you speak, and then we'll ask questions.
Okay. Good afternoon, Co-Chair Representative Thompson and Co-Chair Representative Green League members of the committee. For the record, my name is Martin Petione, and I'm the Executive Director for the Board of Licensed Social Workers, and I'm appearing before you today in support of House Bill 2394. And thank you for hearing this bill and allowing me to come forward and testify. Basically, what I'd like to do is not go over what Patrick just presented again, but to basically just give you a little bit more of a specific idea from a small board perspective, which is mine, what this bill really would do. My board has a licensee base, just to draw a little bit of a picture. My board has a licensee base of about rapidly approaching 4,000. We have about 50 to 60 complaints a year. We issue on average about 6 final orders per year, and we're easily on track for a higher number this fiscal year. So far, we've had we've really done settlements, but we don't think that our lucky streak on settlements will, quite frankly, continue. And for us, that's a significant worry going down the road. This board is a growing board. We have a growing licensee base. We have a growing number of complaints, and quite frankly, we know that in the budget process, it's not really possible to simply say, well, we think we're going to have 2 or 3 more cases on the contested case front and get limitation for that up front, because then, of course, the fear is, well, if they don't materialize, then you suddenly have limitation we can use for something else. And so that's not really a feasible way. So we really tried to work hard to find an alternative here. And simply put, you know, as Patrick alluded to, there really is a significant cost attached to the contested cases. I just want to emphasize that there is no discount for those costs just because you happen to be a small health regulatory board. And so, you know, for us, for this board, we have a biennial allocation, just to be really specific, of about $70,000 for AG costs. It needs to last just for 2 years. This biennium, I'm scheduled to use up that just for regular advice and counsel on investigations and settlements without having a contested case. So there is significant worry about the future. And basically, what we're really talking about here is an efficiency mechanism that we don't then have to go to the e-board in that worst-case scenario, but we would have a mechanism where we could, without going to the e-board, access up to X percent of our fund balance. And the second piece that I really want to leave you with, and I put this specifically in my written testimony because there's a lot of discussion in this building sometimes about, particularly on ways and means, around ending balances and what's the appropriate amount of ending balance for a board. And I just want to just put on the public record that when you hear about the relatively simplistic approaches of, you know, hey, it's really a good idea to just simply have, you know, let's say 3 months worth of ending balance and that's sufficient. When you're dealing with a health regulatory board, I think it's really important to understand and for us to start talking about that ending balances serve more than one purpose. It's not just an operational issue that deals with cash flow and making sure that you can make it through cash flow situations. Ending balances is what health regulatory boards have as their piggy bank, so that if you do get into that contested case situation, and you do need to access money to provide for a case, that's where you go. And then sometimes, quite frankly, that simplistic, you know, 3 months across the board approach may not be such a good idea, and it may not provide for sufficient limitation. This provides flexibility and efficiency, and we see it as a good starting point. And with that, I'll close my testimony, and I'm happy to take questions with Patrick.
Representative Hoyle, did you have anything you want to add to the work group, or?
I think, first of all, I just want to say how enjoyable it was to work with this work group, just in finding ways to be more efficient, to get better service, better consumer protection, and better support for our professionals. And I was extremely impressed with the executive directors, everybody that was there. I think the two points that are important are that, one, these are not state dollars. These are licensing fees from professionals that they pay into this fund. So this is, these are not state dollars. And one of the biggest worries and one of the concerns from some of the smaller boards were that without having those funds available, in the case of where they need to go after someone who pursue a case against someone that really shouldn't be practicing, without having the funds there, they're not in a position to be able to protect consumers and really protect the reputation of good practitioners. So I think this is it's a good bill. It speaks to efficiency, and it also protects consumers and good professionals.
Thank you. Anyone else?
Just for my own clarification, are these protected funds, or are these like sweepable funds?
Chair Greenlee, Chair Thompson, members of the committee, they're sweepable funds. And in our case, we're an other funds agency, and if the legislature chose to do so, they could sweep the ending balance of our particular agency. Okay. So, yeah, they're not protected funds.
I'm not advocating this.
No, I know, but I'm just saying they're not protected. And I would like to add also, on behalf of all of the executive directors' work, it was a pleasure to work with Representative Hoyle. I'm sure she learned more about health regulatory boards than she ever wanted to learn about, but it was a great pleasure to work with her, and she was very much wanted us to be on task and come with recommendations, and we did. And so I want to just add that we enjoyed very much working with her. So we were happy that Representative Greenlee, you had either suggested or encouraged her to accept that assignment. That was very nice.
I didn't even have to twist her up.
Representative Doherty? Representative Doherty, do you have a question?
No.
Oh, okay, I'm sorry. I thought I saw your hand up. Anyone else? Okay, seeing none, I will close the hearing on House Bill 2394. And I will thank you for your testimony.
Thank you.
And we will open a public hearing on 2395. And we have Dave McTeague, John McCulley, and Brian Barringer.
Mr. Co-Chair, members of the committee, House Bill 2395 again comes from the Health Professional Regulatory Board Work Group, and the bill is again looking to regulate and articulate the use of the terms clinic institute specialist by health professionals. The original bill declares an emergency and is effective on passage. However, you do have before you a -1 amendment and a hand and gross bill. Thank you.
Gentlemen, you know the drill.
Co-Chair Thompson, members of the committee, my name is Dave McTeague. I'm the Executive Director of the Board of Chiropractic Examiners and probably the main person that brought forward the issues involved in House Bill 2395. In the 2009 legislative session, House Bill 2009 was passed, and I think what happened there is there was issues about who can use the term doctor that was discussed at some length. And I think that in all that discussion, there were some changes made in the underlying consumer protection portions of the law that I think were unintentional, is my understanding. This is an issue that comes up frequently with some regularity for the chiropractic board, in that we have practitioners who will often in their advertising not indicate anything about being a doctor or a chiropractor. They'll just say pain care clinic or call this number if you have thyroid symptoms. I've given you an example of advertising that previously would have been covered under the Doctor's Title Act, but after the 2009 changes, I don't think it is. We contacted this doctor and said, hey, you know, we think that's a little misleading. So as a fallback position, we use that to try and encourage him to tell the consumer that this is a chiropractor that's advertising this. Because I think, you know, chiropractors have a lot of experience in treating nutritional and botanical approaches to holistic health care, but a lot of people might not associate them with treating thyroid conditions, for example, and I think the public would want to know that a chiropractor is advertising as opposed to, you know, somebody else with maybe a medical specialty. So we proposed some changes in the law. If you look at the Dash 1 amendments, the original bill kind of missed the mark a little bit, and so I worked with Sandy to have some amendments drafted, which try and reinstate portions of the law that kind of basically say if you're a doctor, not if you use the term doctor in your advertising, but if you are a doctor that's recognized under the Doctor's Title Act and you're advertising in various media, whether it's billboards or newspaper ads or telemarketing or whatever, you've got to include a term that identifies your profession, in our case chiropractor, chiropractic physician, or chiropractic clinic, so the consumer knows. And that's what we're trying to do. There seems to be some concern about the terms clinic, institute, or specialist that you're going to hear from my cohorts at the table here. I'm not wedded to those terms. They're not too different from what the law previous to 2009 had in the statute, but some people are seeing some particular issues, and we're certainly open to changes or tweaks to make that work better. But the basic thrust of what I'm getting at is we want our licensees, doctors of whatever, should let the consumers know in their advertising what is the profession and not try and skate around it by not saying doctor and then not having the provisions of the law go into effect. I hope you understand what I'm saying.
Sounds good. If there's no objection, I'd like to just have all three of them give their testimony, and then we can go to questions.
Mr. Co-Chair, members of the committee, my name is John McCulley. I'm here representing the Oregon Speech Language Hearing Association. And when this bill was sent to some of our members, they were concerned about the prohibition against using words like clinic or institute. These are master's level, that's the terminal degree normally for a speech-language pathologist, and many of them do use the term speech institute, speech and hearing institute, and so the issue arose, you know, would we still be able to call our business the hearing or speech institute if this bill were enacted? And so that's the issue that we bring to you, wondering about that. The other thing I just would mention, several years ago, the hearing aid dealers, hearing aid specialists, became hearing aid specialists. That was actually the term that is now applied to those who provide hearing aids. They actually use the term specialist, even though a hearing aid specialist need only have a GED to be able to practice in that health profession. So those are just issues that are of concern to us, and we wanted to make sure that people who are health professionals who don't have a doctorate degree could still use those terms of clinic and institute specifically.
Thank you, John. Brian?
Chair Thompson, Chair Greenlick, I'm Brian Beringer with the Oregon Medical Association. We also, I think we've had a couple conversations out in the hallway. We understand Mr. McTeague's issue, absolutely agree with the intent of what he's trying to do. Transparency and truth in advertising is very important for the consumers. We think that there's a miss here that we can fix. We're just not quite there in the language yet. We had a couple conversations. I think we've looked at the Dash 1s. I think the Dash 1s are better, but I think there's still a couple things we can do. And so what we'd like to do is get our drafter in with Mr. McTeague and others to see if we can't get these fixed to do what we want.
So then I'm to assume that whatever changes need to be made, you guys have them under control and they'll be forthcoming. Questions, comments, discussion?
Great to see happiness and
heart. So great to see people get along. You know? Okay, nothing further? Okay, I will close the hearing on House Bill 2395. And we will open a hearing, public hearing, on House Bill 2381. And I'm going to ask our co-chair to give his testimony first, and we can return him to the dais. And you can come out if you want. And then we will continue with the other two.
Thank you very much, Mr. Chair. I'm State Representative Ms. Greenlick, House District 33, and very happy to be here for a hearing on House Bill 2381. I think you'll find House Bill 2381 came about because of a rational process. We'll see what Mr. Kapori says. I was a part of the cabal that in past sessions tried to strip the semi-independent status from three semi-independent boards. There were things that concerned me, that 14 of our boards sort of had one status and three had a different status. And I was somewhat skeptical about some of the claims for the effectiveness of the semi-independent status. And we did some analysis work with LFO and found out some things. So I agreed in the interim to meet with the representatives of the three semi-independent boards to talk to them to see if we could come forward with a bill that made sense. And they asked me what was my concern, what were the things that I was most worried about. And one was the fact that the semi-independent boards reported their financial statistics way late, long past when we could do anything about it. The second was that the boards weren't required to follow the state regulations on personnel. One of the interesting things we found about the semi-independent at the time was that the main thing that was different was that their execs made more money than any other of the execs made. And a couple of cases, significantly more money. And the third thing was that they weren't required to follow state employment regulations, and that led to some problems in some of the boards. And we talked about, remember the boards, we talked about it, and it turned out they felt that they were comfortable following the state salary structure and following the state employment regulations for their employees, and that they would be happy to go along with that. They weren't quite so happy about the notion of getting into the LFO process for the board budgetary things, and it came to me that I'm not crazy about that LFO process either. As I'm sitting now on the subcommittee, and there is a proposal out of the group of executive directors of the whole group of boards, the 17 health professional licensing boards, to propose a new model, a more streamlined model for dealing with their budgetary requests. And we came to the conclusion that okay, let's use these boards voluntarily to test that new streamlined model that's being carried forward, and get that out of the proposed bill. So you have a set of -1 amendments to the proposed bill that I believe takes away all the stuff about getting into the LFO. I mean, that simply takes away the semi-independent status. Deletes out the stuff about the budgeting process, but leaves in the agreement with them that they will follow the state personnel procedures and will follow the state salary structure as well. And I think what you have in front of you is the -1s that I believe do that, although I realize I haven't looked at every line, but I think that's what happened. So I am happy. I'm anxious to hear what Mr. Kapori says. He better be careful, all right?
He'll right. Be back up here.
I'll be up there pretty soon. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Thank you. I think while Co-Chair Greenlick returns to the dais, I will untangle myself and ask our committee assistant to give us a brief rundown on this bill.
Oh. Okay. Mr. Co-Chair, members of the committee, House Bill 2381 obviously speaks to the bill as introduced, which provides that state personnel relations law and provisions relating to state financial administration, salaries and expenses of public employees, and administration of the public funds apply to the Oregon Board of Optometry, State Board of Massage Therapists, Physical Therapist Licensing Board. It also establishes funds for the boards in the state treasury and continuously appropriates money into the funds to the boards. This too has an emergency clause. This does have a subsequent referral to Ways and Means.
Okay, it appears that Co-Chair Greenlick wants to keep Mr. Kifori within arm's reach, so we will allow him to stay there. Stephen, if you'll come up, and we also want Kelly Page.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, members of the committee, Mr. Co-Chair. My name is Stephen Kifori. I'm here representing the Semi-Independent Boards Association this afternoon. And before I talk, I'd like to just briefly say that I think this is the way legislation ought to be developed. A legislator has concern, raises a concern, has a bill drafted. People who deal with the issue on a day-to-day basis take a look at it, say, here's where we can give some, here's where we can take some. We sit down with the legislator. We come back to the legislature with a bill, amended bill that we think works for us, worked for the certainly for the legislator and for the people of Oregon. So I'm pleased to be here presenting amendments to 2381. Mm-hmm. And
works so well around bikes.
Do we need to talk?
Representative Greenlick is my personal representative, so I keep a close eye on him. Semi-independent agencies, let me just give you a very brief rundown on what this is all about. It started in 1991 with three agencies, and the thought was that there's a different process that's for efficiency running small agencies and running big agencies. And if we can take some of these small agencies and give them a little more flexibility, everyone will be better off for it. There are now 14 semi-independent agencies. Most of these are licensing boards. Three are health licensing boards. The others are those are the massage therapists, the optometrists, and the physical therapists. And then we have such people as landscape contractors and appraisers, and there's other licensing boards. I say the basic concept is that there's a difference in operating a small agency than a big one. Processes that make a lot of sense for a big agency often do not for a small agency. For example, purchasing. It makes sense for a big agency to join in a purchasing pool and get things at a lower cost. On the other hand, it often makes sense for a small agency to run down to the grocery store when they're having a sale on pencils and not have to go through a process of procurement and writing up all kinds of paperwork. State facilities make a lot of sense for big agencies. For a small agency, they might find that there's a rental unit down the street that somebody has vacated and they can move into this office space cheaply on short notice, and they can save money doing it. The big difference is the budgeting issue, and that's what Representative Greenlick alluded to. The budgeting process is enormously time-consuming, outrageously time-consuming for small agencies. It can literally take months and months and months just to prepare for a biennial budget, and then when you're done, you start over again, months and months and months of preparation. So as the legislature in the old days, we used to look and say, well, you bought two staplers, are you sure you needed two? And that's not the kind of thing we think the legislature ought to be spending its time on. We are not independent. We are semi-independent. That means we still abide by a lot of state statutes. We're audited by the Secretary of State. We obey the public meetings and public records law. Our employees are in PERS. We think it's a nice combination of independence and still being state agencies that we've achieved. And I'd like to introduce to you Kelly Page, who's the Executive Director of the Board of Optometry, and talk specifically about our amendments.
Hello. Co-Chairs Greenlick and Thompson and members of the committee. For the record, my name is Kelly Page. I'm the Executive Director of the Oregon Board of Optometry, and we're one of the agencies that's affected by this legislation. I'm here to testify in support of this bill as amended. I've given you some written testimony, so I won't read this to you. I was able to meet with Representative Greenlich a couple of times last year and start talking to him about some of his concerns about semi-independence. I'm new to my agency, although I've been with the state of Oregon since 1993, and I knew that he had in particular some concerns about semi-independence. So I wanted to kind of be proactive in finding out what those were and seeing how we could work with him to come to a compromise this session. There were, as he said, I thought, three major concerns, and one was the salary issues, and one was basically the information about our budgets. One of our proposals was to back up our budget development and presentation so that the three semi-independent health agencies would be able to present our proposed budget document for the next biennium, which had been approved through our process, which is a hearing, a rule, board approval, at least present that to the legislature and the governor at the start of the legislative session, which deals with the biennial budget, rather than in the big report that we give to the governor, LFO, the Speaker of the House, and the Senate President, which has now been pushed back to April of 2012, which is 10 months into the new biennium. So no one really is going to get this information for a while. But with the start of the next biennium, I'm hoping that the three of us can actually get our little budget document to you by the end of this biennium. We were all part of this Health Professional Regulatory Board group working on these different subcommittees during the summer, and we would like to kind of pilot this new streamlined budget proposal so that hopefully when it is adopted for all the Health Professional Regulatory Boards, you'll be seeing all of us have all our budget information in the same format. The other great thing about the proposed amendments is that it eliminates the significant fiscal impact that going into the regular budget process would cause the three semi-independent agencies. There would be significant charges, DAS charges, and shared client service charges that we would have to pay that we don't have to pay now. And also, I would urge you to read our semi-independent board report, and that will give you more information about semi-independence. Thank you for allowing me to testify, and I'm here to answer any questions.
Mr. Chair, if I may just add one thing.
Please.
There is a subsequent referral, and that I would request that after, if the bill is amended, they ask LFO, or however your process, and the Speaker, I guess, to have that rescinded, because there will be no need with the amendment for a Ways and Means subsequent referral.
Mm-hmm.
You're a resident expert on that.
And Mr. Chair, once LFO does get the amendment and they comfortably issue a minimal or a no fiscal impact, then we will proceed with getting approval to rescind that before we take official action on it.
Thank you.
Any questions, comments?
Very good.
Concerns?
Mr. Chair, who is responsible for the report that we have before us, the semi-independent boards and agencies report?
It was a group effort. You know how whenever a group gets together to write something, someone started it and we all kind of piled on and weighed in and wordsmithed it for about 6 months, and this was the final effort.
I appreciate it, and I think it's helpful. Yeah. Helps give me a better sense of how these agencies came to exist and how they're different from other state agencies. I did want to note on the funding piece, it says that all semi-independent agencies are self-funded, fully supported by income such as application examination, license fees, federal funds, grants, and other program revenue. I'm certain that that's true for the three that we're discussing in this context. I do want to note the Oregon Office of Film and Video, which I happen to be interested in, is supported by lottery dollars,
right,
which puts it, I think, in a different category than these kind of other funds, license fees, and it is a semi-independent agency. So I just suggest in a second draft of this, noting that there is at least one that uses economic development funds that come from the lottery.
Yeah, I can't remember where in the report it is, but I think somewhere it says that the bulk of this document talks about the regulatory boards. So,
okay.
And I remember looking at that going, oh, well, that's a little bit off. But thank you for bringing that to our attention. We'll expand on that.
Mrs. Widener?
Next.
I'm having trouble with OneNote right now and everything, but this might be a good idea for us to actually go in and look at these agencies closely and get feedback from Representative or Chair Greenlick on some of the expenses there as we're in these type budget times, too, because it sounds like they're PERS members and a lot of other things, and they're a semi-private or part-time, so we may want to dig into this a little deeper than what we've actually done with this legislation here, and would like to sit down with Chair Greenlick on this.
Mr. Co-Chair, Representative Widener, we'd be delighted to spend some time with you and bring some of our folks in. It's very detailed, and we'd love to share that detail with you so that you can see that we bring our budgets in and let you see exactly how we spend. These are our small agency budgets. We're talking a couple hundred thousand dollars, but we at that size, you can understand the budget. If you're looking at a $1 billion budget, you can't. But these kind of budgets, you can take a look and see exactly where we spend our money, where it comes from, where it goes. We're delighted to do that.
If my computer wasn't dead right now, if OneNote would open for me and not keep crashing, I could probably see for myself.
That's why some of us use paper, because it doesn't crash. But
Mr. Chair and Representative Wyler, I also have a brief report we did last year that takes the three semi-independents and three other similar agencies and compares the cost per licensee and the executive salary. I'll be glad to share that with you.
Thank you, Chair Greenlee.
Anything else? Seeing none, I will close the hearing on House Bill 2381.
Mm-hmm.
My only regret for the day is there aren't more legislators and more professional representatives here today to see that if people work together, we actually get clean bills coming before committees. And we can get something done. Congratulations. Is there anything else? Anything else anyone
Mr.
wants
Chair,
to bring before
can I committee? Comment on that as
you
well?
Absolutely can.
I do want to thank Representative Hoyle, who I just only had to twist her arm a little bit.
I remember that.
To do that. But
yeah.
That group of executive directors is now talking to each other.
Yep.
They're doing things like doing joint site visits with each other to try and see how they're doing as an agency. I mean, they are doing, I think, an extraordinary job. And essentially, Representative Hoyle and Claudia Black were the key movers on getting that going.
Perhaps we could just develop a policy of putting Representative Hoyle in charge of all work groups.
Or not. Representatives should have those opportunities to compete as well.
Yeah,
I don't want to take all the glory.
Yeah. Well said.
Hard to argue.
Is there anything else before the committee today?
Look at the time.
If not, the February 16th, 2011 meeting of the House Committee on Health Care is adjourned.